Shalom and welcome again to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I am your host, Rabbi Richard Address. These podcasts hope to explore some of the issues that touch on our families, our communities, and ourselves as a result of our revolution in longevity. And you can contact us via our homepage, jewishsacredaging.com, or via our Facebook page, Jewish Sacred Aging on Facebook. And we welcome your comments either on the voicemail icon on the website or to me directly, Rabbi Address at jewishsacredaging.com. And it is with great pleasure that we welcome to the microphone here on Seekers of Meaning, Steve Cohen, the chairman of Meditation for Leadership, and Stephanie Cohen, one of the board members. And yes, they're related. So welcome, guys. Nice to see you. Nice to coming out on, we're recording on a very gloomy, rainy Monday. So thank you for schlepping out here. Nice to see you guys. How are you?
Well, good. Thank you for having us.
Good, good. Meditation for Leadership. This is something very, very unique. And we want to talk a little bit about what it is and how it got to be. So Steve, why don't you just walk me through the sort of like the aleph bet of this. What is Meditation for Leadership and why did you create it?
Meditation for Leadership is an organization that seeks to make more people aware of the benefits of meditation.
So, and when you say leadership, are you working in organizations, synagogues, all of the above? I mean, talk to me about that. Who are the leaders that you're talking about? You go into organizations, is that correct?
We do. And an organization can be defined broadly for this purpose. It can be a business organization. Could be a nonprofit organization, a community organization. It can even be your family organization.
No, really?
And one of the things I found when I first started teaching meditation was that you can't predict how people are going to apply the benefits of meditation to their life. So I might be speaking to a group of CEOs, and the CEO, and we will be doing an exercise, and we'll ask the CEOs to sort of pick a group and do an exercise, and the group they might pick is their family organization because they have some dysfunctional aspects of their family organization that they'd like to work on.
So, I mean, what I'm interested also, what got you in? Have you always been into meditation, or is there something that happened to put you into this framework?
Well, yeah, and in fact, if you asked me 15 years ago, I would have been someone who swore I can't meditate.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm a type A personality. I'm a lawyer. I was always very academically focused. I was very work focused, play hard, work hard type of person. And what I noticed was over in my 30s, I was having this debilitating back pain. And the stress of life, just like everyone, you know, starts to hit you. And so then I started practicing yoga, and I still would have said I couldn't meditate, but the lessons of yoga kind of sort of seeping in over a sort of a 5-year period. And then I got what I call my big break, which is I ruptured my Achilles tendon.
Oh.
And didn't seem like a good thing at the time, but it was actually one of the most positive life-changing moments, as I had 10 weeks where I couldn't drive to work. I had to keep my foot elevated. I still tried to do some work, but I had some time on my hands. So I started a daily meditation practice.
Just by yourself?
I mean, I was reading, I was doing some stuff. I actually started reading about Buddhism and some of the Eastern religions, and then started practicing and was starting to notice some benefits and wanted to hear more about it.
So one thing led to another. It's very interesting that, again, it's a life-changing event, very biblical.
Yeah.
But that motivated you to look into this for your own benefit. And then you've just translated that, from what I understand, into a religious practice, if I can use that term. And now you've started this Meditation for Leadership for organizations, both religious and non-religious, right? I mean, you work in the corporate world.
That's right. And so one I know, what the observation, mm-hmm. which of course came to me during meditation, was that people aren't experiencing meditation because they're not exposed to it and comfortable with it. And part of that was the language. And so even though I started by reading about Buddhism and Eastern studies, I really wasn't comfortable. So if I would go and maybe sit in a Buddhist ashram just to see what it was like, there were aspects being, you know, Jewish growing up that really made me uncomfortable. And I found my other Judeo-Christian people who were doing some of this and experimenting with some of this were similarly uncomfortable. And so Stephanie and I started exploring the use of meditation within Judaism, which led to help with a friend of mine, Hope Honeyman, leading services at our synagogue for about 4 years. And it was a meditative service.
Meditation service.
And then really finding just the incredible reaction of the participants. So really drawing out of a core group of about 100, sort of 25, 30 people each week, and hearing how this was changing their life positively, and how they otherwise wouldn't have been exposed because they weren't comfortable with Buddhist language. They weren't comfortable walking into a yoga studio. They weren't comfortable with the other places in which this was being taught.
Stephanie, you guys have three daughters. Do you find the greater sense of acceptance of these practices amongst your daughter's generation, and they're from their early 20s down to a senior in high school? I mean, you also came to meditation, right? In a particular way, and this wasn't part of your growing up, I would assume.
So I think I maybe came to meditation a little bit earlier, but I might not have known that that's what it was. So as a child, I was a lot more meditative. I was, my head was in the clouds. I was that kind of kid. And so, although my academic and professional path was similar to Steve's, my natural perspective was different. So I would say my path was definitely different, and my practice is very different from Steve's as well. It's interesting. It shows that there are a lot of different ways that meditation and meditation among leaders and different kinds of leaders can manifest. It's a very individual process, but the principles are all the same. Is it more prevalent in the next generation? I think probably yes. I think that this generation has just grown up in a different world where they have to be immediately present. Some of it has to do with the threats in the world around them. We've all heard a lot about millennials and how they function in the workplace and how they're going to grow into leaders. I suspect will look different from how it looked in our generation. So I think probably it is different and they're more open to it. But it's been really interesting as we've worked with a lot of different people from different backgrounds in meditation for leadership to see people responding in a really positive way. In some ways, there are similarities, and in some ways, it's a very unique individual experience.
Meditation for Leadership, in case somebody wants to pursue this, there's a website, I would assume. What is it?
Meditation with the number 4, leadership.org. So meditation for number 4, leadership.org.
All lowercase, case sensitive?
No, it's not case sensitive. And we have about 12 meditations that are already on the website, guided meditations. And then we're going to launch in January a sort of how to learn how to meditate series.
Oh, okay.
For the beginner.
Now, you do this with, let's say, ABC Corporation, just for the sake of it. They'll contact you. And we're having our annual meeting, or we're having, we sense a need to bring our leadership together. Would you come and do this? Is it a day? Is it a weekend? Is it half a day? Is it all of the above? Or is it tailored to this specific organization?
Right. So the core product is 5 sessions. And the 5 sessions focus on an introduction to meditation, and then on the 4 foundational pillars that we've observed derived from meditation.
Which are?
Awareness, connection, perspective, and potential.
All right. So the 5 sessions are formulated around or touch these 4 pillars, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And those 4 pillars, again, are awareness?
Awareness, connection, perspective, and potential.
So how do you then, you take a group of business leaders who may never have looked at this before or thought, what the heck does this have to do with my bottom line or my marketing, et cetera? And you've begun to test this out What's been the reaction of I imagine there's a lot of skepticism at the beginning.
There's always skepticism at the beginning. And one of the things that has helped has really been that the science has caught up to the experience. And so there's about 1,000 studies that have been done over the last 5 or 10 years. There's a bunch that are already in session. They're very reputable groups at Harvard, NIH. And what they've concluded is that really just 10 minutes a day can physically change your brain activity. And you have quicker reactions to stimuli. So in other words, you're more aware. You have increased empathy. You're less likely to have debilitating stress, anxiety, or depression. You have healthier sleep patterns, increased focus, and you have an increased capacity for divergent thinking or creative thinking, which leads to innovation. So these are qualities that really help you in business and in all aspects of your life.
So you also mentioned, we were talking before we started this, that these four foundational pillars is what you're calling them, mm-hmm. also lead to or discussing certain leadership traits. That these leadership traits that you identify through Meditation for Leadership seminars, do they emerge organically or do you point out them and we're going to walk through these 13?
Right. So we generally will structure our programs, whether it's a retreat or whether it's a one-time introduction or whether it's the five-part series, around the pillars and whatever the organization is focusing on. Right. So every organization these days, a large organization, is focusing on increased wellness for their people. They're focusing on various traits that they've identified that are core to their organization, that are core for their people. And they're using different techniques to try and reinforce those traits. So it might be something like communication skills, or relationship building, or team orientation, or vision, or having a growth mindset, or increased focus that are helpful for that organization. But they haven't really thought about meditation as a tool or technique to teach these. And so that's what Meditation for Leadership brings to the table. So we have our product, but we also will tailor it to particular organizations, and that's been really, really effective.
It just occurred to me, you just mentioned the tailoring. So do you write or create guided meditations that would be specific to an organization's culture or product? So in other words, if, just for the sake of argument, if I'm the board of a hospital, mm-hmm. and I bring Meditation for Leadership in, and I said, this is what we want to do. We're growing. Healthcare is changing. Patient first, Medicaid, blah, 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 all the stuff that's going on. Could you create a series of meditations that specifically speak to what we do within the context of this healthcare system? Do you do that?
No question about it. So,
That's cool.
I've written a book called Leading from Within. It should be out in the first quarter of 2019. And it has 50 guided meditations in it. And each of the 13 chapters focused on a leadership trait that I've observed of effective leaders, and profiles a well-known author or CEO who really exhibited that trait. So, for example, Steve Jobs, for creativity, a Stephen Covey, and Arianna Huffington, Malcolm Gladwell, those types of Phil Jackson, who you would know for team orientation.
I know who the other people are too.
And so
there's no Philadelphia sports person on there, is there?
There isn't. Yes, however,
figures.
Zach Ertz practices every Friday.
Really?
A yoga and meditation to
He's
get ready.
He's a football player for the Eagles, for those of you who may not know Philadelphia sports.
That's right. And there are increasing number of examples. So what each chapter does, it profiles one of the leadership traits. it introduces a new type of meditation or a different type of technique. And it has meditation practices that link that technique to the leadership principle using your focus organization. So, for example, let's just take your hospital example.
Right, right.
So one of the first things you have to do as a board is be aware of what some of the issues are. And so in focusing on some meditations with respect to self-awareness will help a board determine what it what it is they need to be focusing on. And you say, well, aren't they doing that already? And what meditation, one of the byproduct of meditation really is that it helps you while you're in a meditative state for a different type of information to come into your consciousness than you get during your day-to-day state. So day-to-day state, you have the chatter, you tend to keep repeating the same thoughts through your mind. And what meditation will help leaders of an organization do is to take a pause, clear their mind a bit, and see what fills that void. And it's often quite insightful.
Do you find a growing number of organizations that are building in meditation practices as part of the daily routine? I'm thinking of perhaps some of the Silicon Valley organizations that this is part of their culture as opposed to introducing this to the culture. Have you in your research?
No question about it. So Google is a big leader.
Really?
Facebook also has regular programs and regular meditation practices that they teach. But it really hasn't spread so far that far outside of Silicon Valley and outside of some of those organizations.
In the United States. What about around the world? I would imagine, well, this is... let me rephrase this. Is this concept more amenable to other cultures, for example, Asian cultures and corporate structures, than it is in the West, in our country?
Yeah, for example, when I was in China, it's more inherently part of what people were already doing. So I'll never forget being in Beijing and walking around a park on a Sunday morning, and there were literally 100,000 people practicing Tai Chi. And you could join and other people join. And it's just part of their culture more to take that pause. Mm-hmm. The American culture doesn't have a pause anymore. I mean, even things like going to church on Sunday or synagogue on Friday night or Saturday, we just don't do that with the same regularity. And so what we tend to do is the chatter of our mind, we just keep going. We just keep doing the same thing. The stress keeps building. We don't take that time where the new ideas can flow.
So Stephanie, is the stress relief? I mean, you do this. You're part of the organization. You're a board member. Is this ultimately in enhancing leadership? Does it really come down to relieving stress and allowing people to prioritize things and not get caught up, as Steve is saying, in just this overwhelming wave of information and stuff?
I don't think I would really call it a stress reliever, although that could certainly happen for a lot of people. I think it's more a question of teaching people or reminding them, because in fact, you kind of already know this because it's an internal thing, to be quiet, to be still, to listen to your own natural wisdom, which emerges when you are quiet. And meditation can make you better in everything that you do. So when we target meditation for leadership, specifically to people who are leaders in their organization or their community, really what we're doing is giving them tools to enhance being better versions of themselves, which will allow them to open up channels to be more effective and have more impact in everything that they do, including in their work, in their family groups, in their community organizations.
Why do you think so many people are afraid to do this?
I think people, for the same reason people are afraid of lots of different things. Some of it is just lack of knowledge. Some of it is a perception that they won't be able to succeed. Some of it is just lack of exposure. So we really try and get over all of those things. And remember, when you're trying to quiet your mind and you quiet that day-to-day chatter, it's really, you have to experience it to fully appreciate it. So you can't just talk about it. You can't just read about it. But what you really experience is, you know, someone will pop into your head, right? Mm-hmm. I haven't talked to my brother in 2 weeks. This client, you know, I haven't heard from him in a while. You know, this problem, I was teaching a class and this engineer told me that they were just trying to quiet their mind. They were doing a regular meditation and this engineering problem that he had and he'd been struggling with for a month, the solution just popped into his head. And as you experience daily meditation, you start to see these things happen more and more. And you asked about the hospital. So, for example, one of my favorite guided meditations is to ask yourself, once set an intention for your meditation of, you know, what are my biggest opportunities? You know, how can I be excellent? What are some of my, you know, most positive traits that I can apply? And then just pause, right? We spend so much time worrying about the day-to-day crisis. What do I need to do at this moment? That we really don't spend enough time on what our opportunities are. And one of the things that I find from people that have a daily meditation practice is they're better able to balance what needs to be done today and their opportunities.
You mentioned the daily meditation practice. You two both met. How long do you do this? Is it 10 minutes like the article you quote, you refer to? Is it an hour? Is it 30? What is, or does it just vary from person to person and day to day?
Well, I don't have an hour, but I do have 10 minutes. I mean, I honestly try to do it first thing in the morning. Mm-hmm. I do set my alarm about 15 minutes earlier than I otherwise would. And I don't really time it, although at some point the noise of the house, you know, we'll say it's over. But about 10 minutes a day, we'll do it.
Really?
Yeah.
And there are other ways to use it, you know, from that timing perspective. If there's a difficult problem that you're trying to come up with a creative solution to, it's a great time to just take a few deep breaths and to settle yourself, whether it's in the workplace or in your car, wherever else you might be. And the same thing applies if you've had a difficult interaction with someone, in the corporate world and in the nonprofit world and in the family and community organizations that we talk about. Inevitably, we're working with other people, right? We have teams, we have relationships, and very often someone will trigger somebody. There'll be a negative interaction that will take someone back into a head spin. And that's the time to take those few deep breaths. It might not even be 10 minutes. It might be a lot less than 10 minutes, but to just pull yourself back from the situation, to quiet yourself, to try to break the cycle of a bad reaction and to loop into that natural wisdom that will allow you to then move forward from a more aware place.
The website again, Steve, is what?
Is meditation4leadership.org.
I've heard talk to people, and I did this myself. I can't do this. I don't have the time. How can I do? I'm not wired this way. This is, you know, too new agey. What's the best advice you can give people who say, I thought about this, but then they give the list. What's the best way to get started other than just do it?
So one of my meditation teachers used to say that everyone should meditate 10 minutes a day. And for those who don't have 10 minutes a day, they should meditate 20 minutes a day. and the truth is the irony of this practice is those who think they can do it the least, those who think they don't have the time, are the ones who need it the most.
But how do you get started? How do you tell somebody, okay, this is how you do it? There's no manual, or is there a manual?
Well, these days it's so easy with their apps.
Right.
And online services that really allow you to do that. But really that's why we're trying to go into where people are, right? So that's why I originally went into the synagogue, why we're going into businesses, because there is a natural, you know, there, until you've experienced the benefits, it's hard to have the initiative to get started. And so what we're trying to do is get people started to give people exposure to the benefits of meditation. And then once they get started and start to see the benefits, they will just keep going.
This may be a very elementary question, but you use the term meditation and then guided meditation. What's the difference?
So meditation is actually not something you do. A meditative state is just a state of being. It's a state of quieting that chatter. And you can do it with any number of techniques. They could be a focus technique, could be a focus on the breath, which a lot of people use. I was just at a retreat of a bunch of lawyers, and one of my partners had said that he is not able to meditate. He's never been able to meditate. So I said, well, what do you do to take a pause? And he said that he runs every morning, and he runs for about an hour. And I said, well, do you listen to music while you're running? And he said, no. And I said, well, what do you observe while you're running? And he said, well, it's just a chance to quiet my mind. And I find that some of my most insightful thoughts come to me during my morning run. Well, that's meditation, right? And so different people have different ways in which they are comfortable. But it's everyone can really benefit from that pause.
Do people use music or nature to sort of like as a trigger?
Sure.
Yeah.
Really all kinds of triggers. So some people like a mantra, right? A mantra is a prayer or a word or a phrase that just brings them back to that state of consciousness more quickly. Some people can just focus on their breath. Honestly, that didn't work for me. So focusing on my breath wasn't enough to quiet my mind. The first thing was to observe that I wasn't quieting my mind, right? Because that's the first step.
It's a good hint.
And then what I started doing was a counting meditation. So the counting meditation that I like to do is to start at 50, go down by twos to 40, down by ones to 30, down by twos to 20, etc. Because doing that switch forces you to continue to focus and with one breath, one count. So it'd be inhale 50, inhale 48, and so on. And then what I did to increase my ability to concentrate was when I noticed a thought come into my mind where I wasn't completely focused on the breath and the counting, I would start over again. And actually, it took me a year to get to zero.
No kidding.
But it taught me to be able to focus better. And that focus really, I found, carried on into, you know, not checking my phone every 2 seconds when I was reading a document. You know, being able to read a chapter of a book, right, without a TV on or without music or and once I'm more focused in the present moment, even having this conversation, right? Having this conversation and being more focused will increase both my understanding of what we're talking about and our connection. Because one of the things you find is, and I'm sure you found this before, is you're talking to someone and you're not quite sure if they're really listening to you. And they say something, right? It's like, well, were you really listening to me?
Right.
But what meditation teaches you to do is be more aware in the present moment. And that's what mindfulness, you know, people use the term mindfulness, right? So mindfulness is really being more aware in the present moment rather than being fixated on what happened in the past or focusing on what's going to happen in the future. And what you find is you get so much more out of everything when you're more in the present moment. You get more information. You get more joy. You have better decision making. All of these things then lead you to be more effective.
Is there a perfect time to do this? I mean, you mentioned in the morning, is there a right or wrong time to meditate?
Not only is there no right or wrong time to meditate, there's no right or wrong period. So meditation is a process, and there's no right or wrong way to do it, and there's no success or lack of success in doing it. It's in the journey, not the destination. So there really are no rules. You know, I think individuals experience a tremendous amount of benefit across a lot of areas, but they don't need to be measured in the way that you might measure success in other areas.
Yeah, but if you do this for corporations, isn't there implicit within them bringing meditation for leadership into the boardroom that there are going to be benefits that may redound to the bottom line? I mean,
no question about it. So, if your employees right become more aware of what's going of and see things more how they really are, if creativity is unleashed, if they're able to connect better with their supervisors, their colleagues, the people that they're supervising, their customers. If people have better listening skills and are able to engage more in empathetic listening, if they're able to engage better as a team, if they're able to step back and see things with greater perspective, if they're able to focus those benefits and start to look more at the opportunities, start to look at things that the organization wasn't doing or could do better, and really take the time to institute a growth mindset mm-hmm. within an organization. Those are things that really benefit the organization. And you know, one of the things that always struck me was I had lunch with the chairman of our firm, and we're a large firm. We have 2,000 lawyers and 29 offices around the world.
Wow.
And I always had the misperception that anything he said or wanted to do, that he could just snap his fingers and have done. And he said, actually, it's quite the opposite. You know, what I need to do as a leader is I need to get people on board. And with respect to the decisions that we want to institute, we need to seek feedback in the decision-making process, and then feedback in the decision implementation process to really implement any new idea successfully. And meditation is a way in which people can recognize the extent to which they're not doing that and really figure out, well, why isn't this working, right? Why isn't this working in the marketplace? Why isn't this working within our organization? And use these techniques in order to come up with different solutions than they were coming in with before, with their sort of, you know, chatter mind that just keeps going, notwithstanding the fact that there was an issue. So taking that pause, contemplating the issue, contemplating potential solutions to that issue, will come up with real innovation.
Are you seeing a shift in leadership modalities? Are you seeing more types of attempts or approaches using, bringing you in, saying we want more of that bottom-up type of communication? It can't be patriarchal or top-down anymore, because the nature of business has changed, the nature of leadership has changed, and thus you can help us do that? Because you've outlined, you know, all those, you know, when a corporation brings you in, a great homepage for your website about this is what you can expect when you bring us in. Are you seeing that in the type of leadership that calls you up and says, we want you to come in?
Yes and no. So I think we're starting to see that. I don't think we're seeing that to the extent that we will see that in 5 years from now, because I think these techniques are really being successful. Mm-hmm. And so as more people are finding more success, I think it will spread more. And as really data and information is spreading to more people in the organization and more people are able to do more, it really opens up the possibility for just tremendous increases in organizational efficiency.
So before we start running out of time, your website, meditation4leadership.org, you're going to have on the website, as you alluded to before, how to get in touch with you, goals, objectives, but also sample meditations, you know, for a business person or member of a religious organization that sort of like gives them an insight as to what we can do as what you can do as well as, you know, these are the things that's going to happen. Is that correct? That is correct.
And then hopefully people will, you know, bring us into their organization, because there are certain things, this type of thing does work better in person.
So,
you know, there's some practices you can do and you can reinforce, but these types of programs do work better in person. And so we've been staffing up in order to provide that across the country.
And obviously there's a fee structure for all this, and, you know, it's all on the website, or will be on the website.
There is. So one of the things that we did intentionally was we formed ourselves as a nonprofit. And so by forming ourselves as a nonprofit, we do have flexibility. We have obviously pricing. We do have flexibility. And Malcolm Gladwell wrote a great book called The Tipping Point.
Mm-hmm.
And the premise of The Tipping Point is that when enough people are doing a certain thing, that it reaches that tipping point and then it spreads through society.
Right.
And really the purpose of this organization is to help reach that tipping point for society. Because the founders really believe that, you know, once that is done, if there's greater awareness in society, greater connection, greater perspective, that really, you know, individually, organizationally, societally, we will be able to reach our potential.
So we've been speaking with Stephen Cohen, the chairman of Meditation for Leadership, and one of his board members, Stephanie Cohen. The website again, meditation4leadership.org, one continuous line, not case sensitive. In the 30 seconds we have left, just an easy softball question. Moving forward, what would you want to say to people about this concept of meditation and how it's the power that it can unleash within a person?
The benefits of meditation are not linear. So they show up in all kinds of unexpected ways and in unexpected places. There's really no downside to trying meditation. People can find a couple of minutes to do this. And whether it's a breathing meditation, a counting meditation, a walking meditation, lots of other forms, all of us can benefit from connecting to the wisdom within each of ourselves and then applying it in all different areas in our lives. All we can do is do better.
And Steve, before we go, also the book, the title of the book again is what?
Leading Within.
And it's due out sometime in the beginning of 2019?
Correct.
And your answer to my softball question?
So I'm going to quote one of my favorite books on meditation, one of my favorite stories from Dan Harris, who's an ABC news correspondent.
Mm-hmm.
Who's become very active in the meditation field. And what he says is, you know, meditation won't solve all of your problems. They won't stop bad things from happening. It's not a panacea, but what meditation can do is make you 10% happier. So for 10 days, 10 minutes a day, you can become 10% happier. And then what I've been trying to add to the dialogue is it's also made me 100% more effective.
And that's a good place to stop. 100% more effective. Not too bad. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Stephanie, for joining us on today's edition of Seekers of Meaning. Thank you all for joining us on today's program. A reminder that we welcome comments and contact at our homepage, jewishsacredaging.com, or again to me at rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com. And we invite you to visit our Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. Seekers of Meaning is produced by Steve Lubetkin and recorded at the studios of Lubetkin Global Media here in beautiful Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Thanks again for joining us, and we look forward to greeting you on the next Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. Thank you, and shalom.